How does the Bible help us know whether we are drinking too much water or too little? Welcome to The Good Word. I'm Alden Thompson, your host for this series on health and healing. My conversation partners are health professionals from the Walla Walla Valley, Carl Bauer, MD with a specialty in gastroenterology and a master's in nutrition, Donna Chin, an RN, registered dietitian, also with a master's in nutrition. Welcome to both of you again. Now, let me focus on that question. The Bible doesn't tell us how much water to drink. Doesn't even tell us to drink water, does it? I don't know of any place in the Bible where it says you should drink water.
Water of life, you should.
Oh, water of life, sure. But that's not a health principle. But there are passages in the Bible that deal with water that my guess is that we probably would not apply to us today. And I'm thinking here of some of the laws in Leviticus 11, 13, and 15, that those who carry a carcass, for example, are unclean until evening, even though they wash their clothes according to the law. How would you explain that for somebody who wants to take the Bible seriously and say, I've washed my clothes, washed my hands, but I'm still unclean until evening, till sunset? How would you explain that? Or would you rather not?
I don't have an explanation for that. I do believe, however, that there is enough good, solid evidence about the importance of water as a nutrient. Our bodies are 70% water, and the water that makes up the part of our being in the cells and in the blood and in the interstitial fluid is extremely important. We ingest a couple of liters of water a day, and our gastrointestinal tract secretes another 8 liters each day into the intestine, and then reabsorbs most of that in the distal small intestine and colon. And so we lose only about 100 cc's a day. So water is the medium of our existence. Mm-hmm. The flow of fluid, both in the gastrointestinal tract, in the vascular system, and in the kidneys, and by way of the liver and the bile, these are extremely important functions that we cannot operate efficiently without.
Now, let me ask an unhappy question here, one that irritates me. I'm inclined to think that my thirst is a good guide to how much I should drink, but I keep hearing that I should really drink 8 glasses of water a day. And that irritates me. Should I get over my irritation, or what's the current status of medical knowledge on drinking water?
Actually, thirst is a very effective and reliable means of meeting your body's need for hydration. And most people who respond to thirst appropriately will take in 6 to 8 glasses of water a day.
Yeah. Or 6 to 8 glasses of fluid, shall we say?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, okay. You have a PS on that, Donna?
Well, one of the things that some of the research is showing is that if you are eating a fairly high percentage of your diet in complex carbohydrates and foods that are grown out of the ground, fresh vegetables, fresh fruits, that they have a fairly high water content. And it does actually diminish some of your need for actually drinking water. You're actually getting it through the fresh fruits and vegetables. Mm-hmm. So I would never say it replaces it, but it certainly enhances what you're already doing.
Mm-hmm. I think a couple of weeks ago we mentioned the matter of fluids, and Carl, I asked you about high sugar drinks. See, I found it very helpful to make a transition from even good fruit juices to water. No question about it, it's a healthier way to go.
All sweet drinks, including fruit juices, have a very high glycemic index, meaning that they cause the blood sugar to rise to a very high level very rapidly. Mm-hmm. And that causes a major release of insulin. And insulin is a hormone that is good to keep the blood sugar normal, but is bad in terms of its effect upon the fat functions in our body. That is, it promotes the synthesis of fat. And so when you have a big amount of insulin post-meal, and you have ingested a lot of carbohydrate with that meal, you will turn that carbohydrate into fat because of the high insulin level. Mm-hmm. And that's not healthy.
Yeah.
And so it's better to drink low glycemic drinks, and water is the best drink of all.
Yeah. Just a quick question out of curiosity. Filtered water that doesn't taste nasty, or simply water from the tap? Are all the minerals that we get in tap water good for us, or are you better off to use a Brita and getting something that's not quite so nasty to the taste?
Depends on where you live. If your water supply has been monitored as far as the mineral content and found to be within safe limits, why, it's perfectly okay.
Yeah.
And bottled water sales are a major, major industry now in terms of billions and billions of dollars. And there is no good evidence that these sources of water are better for you than tap water. But on the other hand, there are places in Africa and in Southeast Asia and Asia in general where good water is not available. And in those situations, some process of cleansing is necessary to make the water safe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, another question I'd like to ask here. We talked about the importance of water inside. What about the use of water outside? Because a number of the issues raised in Levitical laws here have to do with cleansing outside. To what extent is that fairly crucial, or are we in the West pretty much into daily baths, daily showers, keep our bodies clean? What are the implications there of not using enough water on the outside of our bodies? I guess we're so used to showering that we just don't even worry about that.
Yeah. Well, there is evidence that in the Western world where people bathe on a regular basis and where they take considerable efforts to keep clean, that this has a negative effect on the body's immune system. The immune system responds to bacterial challenge. And when you don't have appropriate bacterial challenge in the food you eat and in the exposure of your body to bacteria, then you become less capable of dealing with those challenges.
So you're saying that we wash our hands too frequently?
I'm saying that people who live in parts of the world where they're exposed to larger amounts of bacteria and viruses have a healthier immune system than we have in the West.
Uh-huh.
That's been shown in a number of excellent studies.
Yeah.
And so I think one can overdo it in both directions. Obviously, we don't want to live in a bacterial soup. On the other hand, if we keep wash ourselves so frequently and use cleansing solutions to take away all of the bugs on our hands constantly, our immune system doesn't get the appropriate challenges that it needs to stay healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Autoimmune diseases in particular are much more frequent in those parts of the world where people keep extra clean, and also allergic diseases.
Hmm. Well, that's going to be a challenge at our house to do less washing.
Well, I'm not suggesting that you need to do less, but I do know that the major emphasis that you hear right now in the United States is hand washing is very important. And everybody is talking about the major disease processes that occur in hospitals now, like C. difficile colitis and other bacterial processes that can be prevented by keeping your hands clean. The fact is, those diseases are rare in parts of the world where their cleanliness is not a problem. I mean, where people don't stay clean all the time.
Yeah.
If you've ever been in Thailand and watched the kids over there swim in the klongs, which are literally bacterial soup, those kids don't have allergies. They don't have autoimmune diseases. So there is something on the other side of that coin, I think. You can keep too clean if you aren't careful.
Yeah. Okay. Now, I'd like to focus in on the question, which is often an issue for very devout people. And it has to do with sometimes people just reading scripture. They want to do everything that God has said. And within the Adventist community, where we have a great deal of health counsel from Ellen White, how do we negotiate the fact that some advice is simply outdated, because God is reaching people where they are. That's one issue. The other one is the question of application. What works for this person may not work for this person. But very devout people feel guilty if they say, you know, God said this, but it doesn't apply to me. I would be interested in your comments on how we negotiate that in terms of getting a good, healthy response, taking Scripture seriously, but also making the appropriate decisions as far as our own lives are concerned. Donna, you come from a conservative background. How have you dealt with that issue?
Can you repeat the question for me?
Okay. My question is, you come from a conservative background where you're used to taking inspired statements, face value. That's something that applies to me. I need to do it. But it doesn't take very much reading, for instance, if you're reading from the Bible or in the writings of Ellen White, to recognize that you can't apply everything to everyone. And so what you have to do is get brave and strong and say, I know Ellen White said that, but it doesn't apply to me. Or I know Scripture said that, but that's no longer an issue for us today. See, maybe you haven't tussled with that, but for me that was has been a significant issue that I've had to work through in terms of just how do I approach life, how do I approach Scripture, how do I approach those things which God has told us.
I have learned that in all things I do not have the answer. And this would be one of those. And this would be one of the very questions that when I start struggling with, I feel like I should know or I should have a black and white answer, because black and white is my background, that sometimes it is shades of gray, and only when I spend time on my knees and seek the counsel of other wise individuals and ask the Lord to bring this to me clearly in my own circumstance or in someone else's if I'm trying to advise, am I going to even come close to feeling like I have an answer. Because I do believe that it's only the vertical connection that can give us insight sometimes into the answers to these very things. I don't believe that it's a black and white answer.
I agree. I think that's well put. I think the use of water is a classic illustration of how times have changed. In Ellen White's day, hot and cold compresses were the only available way to treat infections that were serious, like pneumonia. Today, that's no longer the case. I was recently in the Ukraine for a week and meeting with the Adventist International Medical Society group there, and they brought to our attention a question that had to do with rabies, which is a big problem out there. And they said, well, we treat rabies by using hot and cold compresses, and if the patient doesn't get better in a few days, then we take them to a doctor. Well, I disagree with that very strongly, because rabies is a 100% fatal disease, and if you don't treat it appropriately with vaccination, the patient's going to die, regardless of how many hot and cold compresses.
That's a good warning. We'll come back to comments like that in the future. Our time is up. My thanks to Carl and Donna for helping us out. My thanks to Michael White, our program engineer, and to all of you for listening in. For the Good Word, I'm Alden Thompson. If you are listening to this on the radio and would like to hear it again, you can. You can go online to the website for Positive Life Radio, plr.org. Look under Programs, Good Word, and there you will find us. You can listen as many times as you wish.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.